My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome back to Pixels and Polygons, episode 22. I'm really proud of myself for moving along here with 22 episodes. I hopefully continue, and I'm looking forward to that triple-digit mark here, so that'll be fun to get to. New episode, and it's a good one. I have a first-time guest. I will not introduce him here because he introduces himself and kind of shares a little bit about him, so kind of keep that for the first segment. But it's great to have a new voice and a new perspective and a really cool conversation there. And on the back half of the episode, the part two, is returning guest Thomas, just lifelong friend and of always consistent guest to have on the show, and always great to kind of hear his thoughts and discussions as well too. So this episode was fun to put together. We had decided to ask that question again of what is that a wow gaming moment? You know, what about it impressed you, and why was that important to you? So not necessarily a specific, you know, greatest of all time style of thing, but you know, just that a moment in a game or a moment in a generation or a time playing that just kind of made you stop and you know, just realize, you know, this was kind of a cool experience. So that's what we're doing. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're having some fun with. Beyond that, I still want to plug the Patreon page. You can find the links below. Follow along there for a bunch of free content and free updates on what I'm working on, some original writings, some previews of some new projects, and a lot of cool extra content just to kind of continue to be involved with the stuff that I'm doing, whether that's my 32-bit library books, my Pixels and Polygon stuff, or other projects. So I'm going to probably have a post up kind of teasing and showing off, really, I guess, announcing my next book project, which is not going to be 32-bit library volume 5. I'm going to do something a little bit different. So take a look there. Again, follow along for free. There is an option to do some paid tiers. It's like $3 or $6 a month that help you either be a participant in some of the stuff that I am creating, or just listen along and get a bonus episode of a show I'm calling Single Player, which is just kind of more Pixels and Polygons style of content. Just me, myself, kind of having some dialogues on not just one set gaming question or gaming topic, but different things. I've done some ranking episodes and top 10-ish episodes and just kind of some nostalgic episodes about, you know, why I love some games and stuff like that. So just more stuff, more podcast content to have if you want. It's all there for you if you do support at one of those paid tiers. But all the other content's free, so take a look at it, enjoy it. This is the end of this intro, so I'm going to get you right into the episode now without more rambling. Enjoy. See you next week. Cool. Well, welcome in. I have a new guest on the show today. This episode's going to be hopefully a fun one. Hopefully you all enjoy it. But I'm going to allow my guests to introduce themselves, share a little bit about what they do and what they've got going on, and just kind of take some time to get to know them. We hope to have them back on future episodes as well. But for the time being, mystery guest, do you want to introduce yourself and let us know a little about who you are and what you do and what some of your passions are?
Yeah, howdy everyone. I'm Luis Aguas-Vivas, and I am a video game critic based in New York, a member of the New York City Video Games Critics Circle here, where we run a yearly award. Not as big as the Game Awards, but pretty big. We get a lot of like big people. Usually we get Reggie Fils-Aimé to co-host the event. Where can you find me? Most of my work appears at one of the oldest independent publications on the internet, which is Pop Matters, which we cover all things popular culture. I am the go-to games writer there, but I also review books, not all of them related to games, and music as well. You can also find me around the internet. I mainly try to stick to independent sites just because they give me the freedom of writing the weird stuff that I want. I don't do a lot of clickbaity, like, things. I try to go really deep analysis where of games, and I try to really state, like, why they're important. Not in the situation like, oh, I like the game. It's like, what's the reason of writing about a game when you can write, you know, about a current topic that's going on? Those type of things are what really, like, drives me to write about video games.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing a little bit about you. Yeah, we'll put some, like, links and things like that to your social medias and your sites and stuff like that in the show details below. So anybody who is interested to learn more, they definitely can follow along there and check you out. But to put you on the spot, we want to do a little icebreaker question first before we get into the main bulk of the episode. Which one should I ask you? We'll start a little easier on this first one. What is your favorite time period or setting of a video game? Like, what is that? What's that, like, a time period or like an environmental kind of setting that you prefer, that you enjoy the most?
Oh, that's really hard. That I enjoy the most. It's a good. I would say this is going to be a cop out, but I'm a huge Dragon Quest degenerate. It's like my favorite game series. So any time period that's essentially, it's not really a time period, but this setting of like this, like, medieval, this fictitious medieval, like, setting, which also has a lot of elements of from other cultures, from around the world. That's typically something that I would enjoy in a Dragon Quest game. I guess if I can cheat and give a second one, any carnival theme or circus theme as well. Those aren't as prevalent in games, but I'll probably talk about that a little bit more. Spoiler for the listeners.
That's fun. Okay, cool. That's good to know. Yeah, the medieval fantasy setting of, like, you know, classic RPGs, you know, is a go-to for one for sure. Just feels good. Just, you know, there's lots of nostalgia tied up there and everything. And some of my favorite games are in the RPG genre, so I'm on board with you there. All right, well, let's get into the main episode then. The main question we want to ask for today. This one I really enjoy asking a lot, just because you get to kind of hear some, you know, personal stories and personal details about, you know, what it is and why. But what is a wow moment you had with a game? You know, what was it about it that kind of impressed you, and you know, and what was the setup to kind of that experience in your mind? So do you have a game that kind of jumps out to you that has given you a wow moment like that?
Yeah, there's a lot, but one that always stuck with me. And it's actually kind of hard to describe. So I think that'd be the most salient, right? Because WoW kind of that insinuates that, like, it takes your breath away.
Yeah.
Right? It's in Skies of Arcadia. So the Sega RPG, when you first go into the Empire's capital, I haven't played this game in over 20 years. So the fact that I remember this, like, lets you know,
That's,
you know,
impact.
Just like,
yeah,
the impact it had on me. It's when you go in, because everything, you know, Sega Blue Skies, you know, this, like, you're part of this, like, sky pirate crew, and everything is just so brimming with potential and, like, possibility. And then when you get to the Empire, and it really is, like, the most, at least for me at the time, it was the most fully realized, at least visually and aesthetically, this manifestation of this, like, almost like Charles Dickens type of, like, upper poverty, just like this, like, oppressive situation where there's, like, this very clear, like, underclass. I know that Final Fantasy VII did it, but it just hit differently for me, because you don't start there, right?
Yeah.
I suppose that definitely is a wow moment for me.
Yeah, that whole game, I loved that game. I had originally missed out on the Dreamcast version of it, but when the Skies of Arcadia Legends came out on GameCube, I was just hooked on that thing. And it still is in the back of my mind. Like, I keep thinking about it would be a great time to like want to replay it. I've been wanting to get one of those. I mean, everybody's making one these days, but those like retro gaming like handhelds. I want one that, you know, that could potentially like, you know, emulate some of the GameCube stuff just to go back specifically for Skies of Arcadia Legends. But yeah, I remember like all of the world design, all the different like islands you visit, like island cities all had like a nice variety to them. But like, yeah, once you started getting into the later game and like to the northern half of the map where there was like that crazy storm and everything, like it just definitely gave the game a different vibe and a different feel. And, you know, it just like the stakes and everything just kind of like raised with it as well too. It wasn't as lighthearted and open, you know, as the adventure was up to that point. It started getting kind of heavy, but yeah, like that was an amazing game.
Yeah, it definitely is. Hoping that Sega does some sort of, you know, re-release either through like a remaster or remake of some type. I mean, even just having that like available somehow, that's not just like through emulation, would be great, because that's definitely one of the great Sega games, and not enough people have played it, unfortunately, just because it has become so obscure, so hard to find.
Yeah,
that and the Panzer Dragoon games. So
yeah, they could do a nice little Sega Classics collection of like their more, you know, not just their traditional, like what you'd expect, no Streets of Rage or Sonic the Hedgehog, like give us some of the deep cuts of their catalog in like a nice compilation. Like I'd be on board. I'd be day one purchase. So
Sega, yeah, same.
Yeah. If you're listening, Sega, do it.
Yeah, do it. Take my money, Sega. It's just waiting for you. It's just, I actually just have a savings account just for Sega games that haven't been re-released yet. It's just waiting for you. It's thousands of dollars, Sega. Just take it. Release it.
That's cool. So did you originally play it on the Dreamcast when you first experienced Skies of Arcadia?
I did, but I never finished it on the Dreamcast. I finished it on the GameCube. Yeah. You know, Skies of Arcadia Legends.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great game. The reason I didn't finish it was I had very limited time to play back when I first had that, and there were so many encounters. Like the random encounters in the Dreamcast version were just like crazy. You would do like two steps.
Yeah, that's one of the things they changed with Legends, was they cut the random encounters in half, and then
it's noticeable.
Yeah, and then they even increase the experience you gain from battles. So far less battles are needed to level up, and yeah, they're not as frequent, which I don't remember being... I think the balance of it on the GameCube version was pretty good. I don't remember ever being like annoyed or bothered by the encounter rate or anything, but thinking about it, like if that encounter rate was essentially doubled and I was getting less experience for it, like, you know, that could maybe feel like a little bit of a grind at points, potentially, but... It still has really good charm. Yeah, it had just really good charm, really good visual style. Like, it had that really cool battle system with like the way you kind of changed like the color spheres of like the elements and, you know, weaknesses and stuff. Like, that was a great game. I do want to play that. I hope in the next year or so I'm in a spot where I've got, you know, I have it available to me and I can enjoy it all over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to, if you can try to play it in the original hardware, but, you know, that stuff is difficult to get and it's also really expensive. So do what you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a Dreamcast. About 2 years ago, my wife gifted me a Dreamcast for my birthday and it was a nice surprise. So it's hooked up and ready to go. We pull it out randomly for some crazy taxi sessions to have some fun, but a nice little Skies of Arcadia treat, you know, will be kind of nice.
That's great. That's one of the greatest gifts a human being can give another human being, as a Dreamcast. So I'm delighted to hear that.
Yeah, that's cool. So the I had one more story about the Legends. I had it on GameCube, like I said, and I remember I hadn't quite finished it, but I think I was just kind of done playing it. But the job I had at the time, I worked at a video game store. I'll unname it. And somebody tried to come in to trade in a copy that was still factory sealed. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I'll just take it and I'll just swap out my personal copy for this sealed copy. Like, you know, I'll just take this home and have a sealed one on my shelf. You know, just it'll be nice. And, you know, years went by and it was just still sat there sealed and everything. And I ended up like thinking it was a big score. I think I sold it for like $150 or maybe $200 on eBay, and I thought, like, you know, like, oh, what a deal I got, like, you know, this is going to be great, like, you know, I made like almost $200, this is awesome. And, you know, just a few years later now, with all of the retro gaming market, like, all these prices have just kind of gone up and gone kind of insane, and like, I definitely lost out on so much money. Like, I didn't even need to sell it at the time, and I still wish I had that sealed copy just staring at me on my shelf, you know, but it's gone.
Wow.
Lost
how much does it go for now? Do you know?
That's a good question. I mean, if I look it up, will I be disappointed? Let's see. Skies of Arcadia. For the GameCube. Do you have a game that you've ever let go or regret getting rid of?
I don't even want to talk about it, man. I don't. Like, it's just so many games that I used to have that either just through moving, they got misplaced, or, you know, yeah, you're similar to your situation. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to. I had almost a complete GameCube library, North American releases, up until 2008, and I sold all that for about, like, I remember correctly, it's actually less than $1,000. I don't want.
Yeah, this one, I mean, this isn't bad. This pricing website that I just pulled up said a new copy of it, you know, is averaging sold around $278. So
all right.
I wonder if that was higher and it's kind of come down or something. I'm not sure. That's still a lot of money. I'm not going to go out and buy a sealed copy for myself right now, but it's not too bad. That just kind of reminds me, like, the visual style, like a WoW gaming moment that I have for myself that I'll share. I remember just being younger as a kid and everything. I had saved up my money for a Nintendo 64 for the first time. We had, you know, a Sega Genesis, and I was going from a Sega family to a Nintendo family. And I was used to so many, like, you know, I played a lot of NBA Jam and Chakan, the Forever Man, and, you know, just Booger Man, just like miscellaneous, like, Genesis side-scrollers, you know, like nothing like... like mind-blowing, like I loved them, and I definitely was a Sega kid for sure, but like nothing like ever like really truly blew me away as a Genesis owner as a kid. But when I got that Nintendo 64 for that first time and playing Super Mario 64, just that opening scene of Mario coming out of the pipe, you know, and jumping, and your first like chance to kind of run around that little outside area outside of the castle, like experiencing like 3D games like that in a fluid way, like in a smooth fluid, like the ability to just kind of like run and go anywhere, like walk, crawl, jump, like all of it was just amazing. Like, I'd seen some 3D games in the past, and, you know, they used either a mixture of, like, you know, sprites in like 3D environments, or they had like really poor camera controls or frame rate issues or things like that, but like to truly get like a leveled up experience like that and see that for the first time, like, that was just, as a kid, just blew me away. And that, I think forever, like, Super Mario 64 is always going to have like a you know, top 10, maybe even top 5 spot for me of all time games, just with the way that kind of just like was just an amazing kind of adventure game to kind of play through. Definitely nostalgia points for being the age that I was as I got it and everything. But that was a really big WoW moment for me.
Yeah, that game was a WoW moment for so many people. And I mean, if you're going to put a list of just like complete, just like earth shattering, like, moments in the history of video games. Yeah, the release of Super Mario 64, and a game that really, for the first time, actually gave you like a playable we should just call it even seamless, like 3D experience, like getting it right for the first time. That's, I mean, I'm going to probably say something that's a little controversial here. I was one of the minorities who was like, I actually didn't believe in 3D. I didn't want 3D. I'm like, 2D games are just so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares? Like, I didn't think that the polygonal graphics at the time looked very good. It wasn't until much later when I played Ape Escape for the PlayStation that I was like, okay, yeah, I see how this works. It's not even Mario. I mean, I played Mario 64 and I thought that was like great, but I still was like, you know, this is like Nintendo. It took them like 10 years to make this. So yeah, but like I wasn't on board. I wanted more cartoony graphics. Mm-hmm. I wanted less realism. But you know, that didn't win out.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you saying. I mean, what's curious, it's interesting though. I ended up getting rid of that Nintendo 64 and got a PlayStation, and that's where like I really just went crazy and like found my calling basically for myself. But I remember I played Castlevania Symphony of the Night, you know, after that. Like I had gotten that, and it was no longer like the idea that like the future was 3D. I think to me the future was just like well-designed games and well-designed gameplay and everything. Because like being able to go in and play Symphony of the Night, like that became one of my all-time favorites as well later on. And that was post Mario 64 for myself. It was just recognizing games come in all shapes, sizes, and scope. You know, like entertainment is just entertainment if it's done right and everything. So, yeah, that's just the power of video games. Right. Well, thank you, Luis. I think that kind of wraps this question here. We'll definitely invite you back and have you on for some further episodes, and I look forward to chatting with you more. Did you want to leave any final thoughts, final moments, final words, anything like that at all for people listening?
No, not much. You know, you can, if you're interested, you can check out some of my writings at Pop Matters. Throughout the internet too. I occasionally contribute also for NPR, on Winnable Magazine, etc. I would say Game Informer, but that's not around anymore, unfortunately. And that's it.
Right on. Well, welcome back to the show, Tomas. I've got an icebreaker here for you to get you warmed up. What am I going to ask you? What is your favorite vehicle or mode of transportation in a video game?
Oh, boy. That one's odd because it always depends on the game itself. Like, you... Some games flying's fun, or sometimes getting in a vehicle is fun, but other games it kind of can suck. So it's really dependent on what world you're in.
Sure. Well, what's the one you had the most fun with?
I think the most fun I've had in vehicles is probably in a tank in Battlefield. Just because of the mayhem, like destructible environments in that game was so cool. At least at this time, I haven't played them in years. But sitting there with my brother, Doug, and just wrecking people because they didn't know how to deal with tanks. Everyone was all into Call of Duty at that time.
Yeah.
So you had people shooting you with a gun, and you're like, guys, bullets aren't going to hurt a tank. Come on.
Then you got a mechanic outside of it repairing it as well,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, just right behind it. Yeah, exactly.
Got that strats. Got the running those strats, those big game, big brain strats.
Yeah, big brain had a 2-brain cell one. Just yeah, all I have to do is hold a button. My score is insane.
That was
I think that's probably the most fun I've had in a vehicle, at least consistently. Is that game?
Yeah,
that tank.
Yeah, Battlefields. I've joined up with you in various Battlefields for a little while, and I think the one I played the most is the one that everyone else wanted to play the least. What was that last one? The semi-futuristic
2040 something. Battlefield 1? Wait, no, 2042?
Yeah, that one. That one I bought and played a lot more of than everybody else who I knew had it. Stopped playing it as well, and I was still like interested in continuing to play. And I'm like, why is this the one that I'm sticking around with when I could have stuck around with any of the other ones?
I feel like that came out after Hardline, and Hardline's where I lost my faith with them, because I bought that and I'm like, oh yeah, cops, robbers type situation. I'm like, this isn't fun. This isn't cool. Mm. And then I think it was like the first time I played on PC as far as a Battlefield game, and it was all, you had to pay for servers and stuff. Like, when you're on console, you have to worry about that stuff for the most part. And this one was really, it was janky. It was bad. Mm. It was just bad.
Hmm. I remember the other massive action game that we had played was Massive Action Game.
Massive Action Game, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the similar to like the mechanic mindset of Battlefield, there was like poison grenades I used to like a lot, and like the person who was like healing people in that, I would love just like being a non-combative like person, but like getting points and getting experience, throwing some poison grenades and just seeing like these things like tick, 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 tick of like getting experience and everything.
I played medic all the time in Mag. I'm like, there's so much utility in like keeping people up is way more important than one person being so much more accurate. You're like, okay, I get it. But if my 40% accurate person stays alive, like double the length, they're going to do more damage. Like, I just need to keep people up, and you can rack up so many points.
Yeah, that was a fun game.
Sadly, though, people tend to just bog down, and they didn't understand you had to capture points, and like just go, move, yeah, please, move. Take the point.
We get to that giant cabin at the end of this map where everyone's funneled onto that staircase and parachuting in.
Oh, man, yeah, that's... Mag was so cool.
Yeah, I had like a Mag, too. All right. Well, thanks for the icebreaker then. Let's roll into the old meat and potatoes here and ask the main episode question. So that is, what is a wow moment you've had with a game, you know, and what was it about it that impressed you? So something that, you know, kind of, you know, it didn't actually have to like, you know, make you say wow, you know, but did it bring you, make you speechless, or did just something just really impress you about a game? So
yeah,
share that.
Yeah. Would you kindly give me some specifics on, that's right. Exactly. That's what I'm going for. BioShock definitely got me. When I think about wow moments, it actually had multiple wow moments. Mm-hmm. For the time, its visuals were stunning. They just absolutely were. Like the water effects, like the trickle and I don't know, their water graphics at the time were great, and they had to be, considering Rapture was under the sea. Like, yeah. If you had bad water effects, it would completely ruin the, I don't know, the game's visuals. And then on top of that, the artistic, like, style, I don't think I had seen like destroyed environments in that setting where it was still kind of functional but kind of not, and like the world was still going but not, and like I just think artistically they had like a wow, this is really, really cool looking. Like everything about the visuals of that game I thought were amazing. But the most wow moment was, of course, the turn where you think you're going after, oh man, and they build it up so well too. Andrew Ryan, that like corporate or multi-billionaire whatever guy, he has so many great quotes. Like I think one of them I remember a lot because it just is so funny, where he's the one who built Rapture and all that, and he wanted to get away from the government because the government and people tried to, I think he called them the parasites. But he's talking about getting a forest or growing a forest, and then he's like, oh, the parasites want me to build a park in this forest, and when the government made a move to nationalize my forest, I burnt it to the ground. It's like, they didn't build this forest, I did. It's like, god, this guy's insane. Yeah, but the big turn in that, spoiler, I mean, I think they remastered it, and I'm sure if you want to go back and play it, halfway through the game you've been like going through and trying to take down this Andrew Ryan guy. And when you finally get there and do, he reveals that you're actually his kid. You've been brainwashed. And when you were asked in the manner of, would you kindly, you will do that. And I had not, that was actually a jaw-dropping wow moment in gaming for me, where I'm like, I'm sorry, what now? Like, I didn't know. I know when you're on like a shooter, you don't necessarily have that much agency. Like, some nowadays have more, but to be told that you're kind of brainwashed in doing these actions in the first place, you're like, well, I was doing it because it was a game, but now I'm doing it because I was brainwashed this whole time. But like, it kind of messed with you a little bit, but it was also just a huge plot twist. I think for storytelling, artistic style, and just vision, it was just a WoW game in general, but that WoW moment was just so, oh man, I'm not in control of my character. I don't have the full picture of the story.
Yeah.
Oh, that was super cool.
That was definitely the era. That was that 360 era where, I don't know, there was like a sweet spot in gaming. Like, I think that, like, yes, the PS2 brought games, and then that generation brought games into, like established 3D realms. Like, it wasn't like the first time people were doing 3D and the first time people were doing first person shooters and the first time people were doing like these types of games. It was, they got through an entire generation, you know, plus, you know, PS1, PS2 plus, and then now to like have like these games that were inspired by those games and games that were inspired by like bigger, broader like storytelling things. And like, you know, definitely that was a game changer. BioShock 1 for sure. I unfortunately never got to beat it. I got just too claustrophobic feeling. That was the first seed of like I couldn't play Resident Evil 7, and I can't play a lot of like scarier games these days because like just a certain feeling of claustrophobia. Like, and it's not really like the idea of me being like trapped in or like anything, but it's just, if I don't feel I have like the ability to like safely and quickly control and maneuver or something like that, like I just get sketched out. And yeah, BioShock has like really good creepy and like atmosphere and environments. And even though it's like, you can lean into like the actionness of it and have some good time with it, there was just still something about like suddenly being limited on ammo potentially. And then having like a dark like corner come up and like a guy starting to charge through it. Like, oh no. I just got a little bit creeped out by it. It does open fantastically. Like I, big fan of the television show Lost. I'm a huge defender of that. It's one of the greatest pieces of television ever made.
Aren't you just a big fan of planes crashing? Like, I remember okay. You celebrating.
I see where you're going. Yep. I appreciate the comedy. You don't have to make the punchline. All planes crashing are not necessarily comedy, but yes. That opening scene though is rad. Like it almost ends and you don't realize it's still like a cutscene or interactive moment. You realize you're like, oh, how long is he going to catch his breath here? Oh, like I'm now maneuvering this through the water and like getting to this lighthouse and everything. Like, it was a cool
seamless
opening.
Transition.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't even get into, like, you mentioned the artistic style, but having like the little sister's big daddy, like weird thing as well. That was,
you can opt into
wild where you can
harvest them and make yourself stronger and like, you know, help make the game easier for you if you want, or actually like save them and like not, like take them out, and then it technically does make the game a little bit harder for you because it's less chance for you to kind of level up and grow in your strength and stuff. But ultimately, is it the moral decision you're going for to help like pace through the game and everything? Yeah,
that game had a lot. We're not talking about the whole series, but I never actually finished Infinite. I think I played the second one, but for some reason, Infinite's like, I don't know, it just didn't grab me.
Yeah, it has an interesting development history too, because the second one was not made by the same developers. A different team kind of took it over and kind of continued and did a decent job with it, it sounds like. But then Infinite was done by that original team, and you know, maybe they bit off more than they can chew, or they wanted to make more, like, how do they one-up themselves, like this meta context of the narrative and everything. And there are people who do love it, but I know it's not one that is as just classically all around, like critically, like, you know, loved like the first one is.
Yeah. I think after you have that game that gave everyone a huge wow moment, like how do you follow it up? Like, you can't always deliver a huge wow moment or change the mold that much. So it's probably a great game, but expectations being what they are, after you deliver something that's probably a masterpiece, I don't know. It's just going to be kind of a letdown because people are going to go in with their, oh, it's a whole new IP, they're going to do something amazing. And then thinking of a Sky City, you're like, oh, yes. But
yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's a good example. I think that's a really cool wow moment. I was going to share one, and it's not really about a specific game, but October 26th, 2000, the launch of the PS2. That was a wow moment for me. I think if I'm going to specifically tie it to a game like Madden, like the launch Madden game that they had for the PS2.
It wasn't Fantavision.
Fantavision. Yeah. That was the only Sony.
You want to light off some fireworks in the skies, guys?
Yeah. That was the only Sony launch title for the PS2, which is crazy. But they got away with it because you had Madden, you had SSX, you had Time Splitters, you had Dynasty Warriors, you had, like, there was a number of games available to you. What was that? Was it Evergrace?
Is this the original SSX or Tricky?
The original SSX was a launch game, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I only got Tricky.
Yeah, Tricky.
Yeah.
It came out on GameCube and Xbox as well, too. So I think that was around the time of, or shortly after the launch of GameCube and Xbox that Tricky came out. But yeah, I mean, I was a big, obviously, like, the PlayStation and Nintendo 64 generation was, like, you know, big for gaming for me. Like, we were all, like, very hardcore and devoted and everything into it. And we had experience even playing sports games growing up and everything. And I know I did play some of the PS1, like Madden and NFL Game Day series of football games. Madden 64, like, was also one that was played a lot. Like, sports games, like, I do... I'm entertained by, you know, in a passing way, like every half decade I'll give another one, like, another shot and stuff like that. But the jump from what they were to, like, that PS2 caliber, like, launch, was just, like, awesome. Like, just the scope and the graphics and the visual, like, stylings of it. The PS2 also having, like, their pressure sensitive, like, face buttons. So, like, instead of just, like, tapping or holding to, like, lob or like, bullet pass, like, it was all, like, It was cool. Like, they really took advantage of that new hardware and everything. And again, like, after Madden, you know, like, okay, I've burned myself out. I've got to wait, you know, a couple of months for something new or big to come out. Like, but no, wait, there's SSX available and this really cool, super visually flashy and, like, wildly, like, awesome arcade snowboarding game. Yeah, that was, like, super rad.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the SSX series. I don't know why that, like, sports games in general just fell off for me, though. I know they're super popular still, but I don't know, the concept of playing a game like that just isn't appealing anymore. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I'm always chasing the, and your brother, also, you know, he did this even more hardcore than I did, but, like, the Sim, like, general manager, like, mindset. Oh, yeah. Of it, like, being able to just, like, build a franchise and everything, and it almost, like, no longer even, like, play the game, like, physically, like, or, you know, like, play the actual game, but just simulate the games, see the stats, see the, like, result, continue to evolve and, you know, trade players and build your franchise and work through the season.
I remember, yeah. It's just, I think we threw on games like that in the background, just be like, all right, we got our teams going, and we let the game play. And just not, we weren't playing at all. It was just the computers going, and you're like, okay, well, we'll see who wins. And we're all doing other things, but checking in on it, like, it's a basketball game on TV.
Yeah.
It's just odd. It's like, well, sports are out for the season, so maybe basketball's not in. Let's see what's going to happen here.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, like, the game itself, I mean, those Madden games at that time were good games, but, like, it's more than the game, I think. It's more of just, like, that console launch and just being there and, like, seeing the leap that those took. And then, but then being wowed by SSX and seeing the leap that, like, an arcadey type of over-the-top snowboarding game. Like, I mean, I'd love of, like, Cool Borders and Cool Borders 2 and stuff like that. So seeing
that. Now that you mention, like, the sense on what's it, R2, L2, mm-hmm. I didn't remember the PS2 had that. I thought that was a later generation thing.
Oh, yeah. No, the face button specifically, though, like square, triangle, circle, and X. Like,
oh, those ones had its own.
Those were pressure
sensors.
Yeah.
Not realize it.
So you can know if you had a good controller or not, because if you played, like, Metal Gear Solid 2, if you needed to put away your gun, if you were in, like, you know, jumped around the corner and pulled out your gun to hold up a guard, if you wanted to put it away without shooting, you had to, like, lightly depress, you know, like, remove your finger from the button, and he would put it away without firing. If you, like, plugged a PS1 controller in or had some janky third-party controller and it wasn't pressure sensitive, as soon as you, like, let go of the button, it would just fire the bullet and shoot. It wouldn't let you, like, not fire.
You mean Mad Cats wasn't doing it for me?
No, nope, wasn't going to do it for you. And yeah, but then Time Splitters was the other like launch one that I loved because it was made by Free Radical, who are like were members of like Rare, who were working on like Perfect Dark and GoldenEye on the 64. So there's a real like spiritual successor like feeling to Time Splitters, and like the gameplay was and had these really cool like mods and like user customizable like things you could do within the game, and just kind of a funky game. But it was, that was a super solid first person shooter as a launch game on the PS2. So, and then Dynasty Warriors, like Dynasty Warriors 2, I mean, that was the scratch the itch for me on mindlessly bashing the skulls of hundreds of enemies.
A big Dynasty Warriors fan. Empires more or less nowadays, but I like building my empire to take over China.
Yeah, to simulate the battles.
Three Kingdoms, China. Hold up. No one's not.
It's what Austin does for basketball games, is what you do for Dynasty Warriors. You no longer are interested in playing the games. You just want to simulate and build the empire to make sure that you can take over. Yeah.
Hey, if they put a... Actually, there, I think there was romancing characters in that game eventually. I was like, there's a dating simulator in there too. I'm all in. Take my money.
That's fun. All right. Well, yeah, that's the episode then. That's cool. A WoW gaming moment. It's always fun just to kind of hear what kind of comes out and everything. But your Bioshock one is definitely that's a staple, you know, head-turning moment for gaming, I think, for sure. But cool. Yeah, well, thanks for... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, hopefully it's not still fresh in everyone's mind. I had a different WoW moment that I was like, no, I feel like this one's a little bit better. But then again, it could be because it's a staple. I don't know. It's like you want to come into these saying something that people aren't thinking of, but I guess sometimes it's just easier not stating the obvious, but stating a big one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it is a big one, and that was a big game, I think, for sure, too. So, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we'll circle back around. I can't come up with infinite questions, so I'll be re-asking the same questions again one day, and yeah, then you can share another example. But cool, thanks for helping me out and jumping on for another episode, Thomas. We'll definitely record some more here soon.